You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to show number 312. Today's Sunday, August 23rd, and my name is Steve. I'm joined by Curtis tonight, no Hammy this evening. And Kurt, in tonight's show, we'll talk about a rough week for the rookie starting pitchers, Jace Peterson's second half, and the possibility of Mike Minor in 2016. But first, Kurt, the Braves went 0-7 this week, the first seven-game losing streak of the year, although at quick glance I saw two six-game losing streaks.
Exactly.
It's been fun. It's been fun this year. So Kurt, what's your good and bad for the week? Let's start with the good.
Yeah, sure. Good is Nick Swisher bringing that joyful exuberance to the field, but
and some hits.
That was a big our left field black hole that is left field for the Braves, regardless of what tired old veteran they throw out there. We actually got some substance out of one of them. Swisher had a big couple of games this week. He ends up batting .467, slugging .933, hit two home runs, had six RBIs, seven hits total. And count those three extra base hits, the Braves only had 14 extra base hits on this entire trip as a team. So, yikes. But congratulations to Nick Swisher for being not as terrible as everyone else this week.
I mean, you know, Swisher, obviously it's a small sample size, but maybe Swisher actually feels healthy and he actually does have something left in the tank and he can be a viable bench piece for next year. You know, I just assumed he was going to be dreadful and they would release him at the end of the year, but maybe he really is part of the picture next year.
Yeah, maybe he is the Johnny Gomes of next year, you know.
Hitting more than 200, though.
Cool, yeah, because clearly Johnny Gomes is not going to be around next year.
No, I don't think so. I'll throw Julio in there on the good. He had a great start in San Diego, six innings, one run, seven strikeouts, one walk, and it was his second strong road start in a row. And that last one, the one before that, was in Philly, which was impressive in and of itself.
Hey, West Coast start.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, good point. And I want to throw Vizcaino in there as well. I mean, he only had one appearance this week because there weren't a lot of opportunities for our closer, as you can imagine. But, you know, he had an appearance today, scoreless inning. I mean, it was one hit and one walk, but he had two strikeouts. And Vizcaino has continued to be almost perfect since he's joined the bullpen. And as you think about the bullpen, Kurt, I mean,
Do I have to think about the bullpen?
Exactly. Other than Vizcaino and maybe Moylan, who actually was quite good this week, four appearances, three of them were completely clean. I mean, other than Vizcaino, there's no definites coming back next year, you know? I mean, McCarrahan, I guess, maybe. But Aardsma, no. Detweiler, no. Who else? Marksberry, I don't know.
Well, you know, I read some stuff, and Marksberry, it's really not fair. I mean, Marksberry has not pitched well. There's no doubt about that. But I mean, they brought the guy up from single A, and there are people like tweeting terrible things to him, you know? I mean, come on.
You mean like you and your Devo pictures?
Yes. I don't know that's more fun than it is, I hope you die kind of stuff. And I love Devo. So
there's that. Yes. All right, what do you got on the bad side? I think we talked a little bit about it with the bullpen there.
I think the bad sign for me this week was my faith in this whole operation. I feel that we all talked about the rebuild and that it was a necessity, that it had to happen, that you had to get rid of these players that you were not going to pay. But at some point, I feel almost like this was a big salary dump and I've been sold in a really big PR move. And I'm not committed to that, but there are times like this week when I'm like, they just dumped a bunch of salary and are now convincing us to stick with us until 2017 and everything will be fine. But I don't see how that's even remotely possible. you have this team. There is no strong point to this team. Obviously, they did rebuild the farm system, but we don't know what any of those players are going to provide to us. We hope that those players, but I don't know what the percentage on players hitting in the majors and being successful. And this team needs these guys to really hit big on a lot of these different areas. We don't have any offense. We've had a 2.42 on this road trip. Our ERA was 5.86. The bullpen, as you mentioned, their ERA was 6.43. We have no power. So there's a restructuring that has to be done. Yeah, we've added a bunch of starting pitching, but we don't have really much in the way of bullpen. I know we've got some guys that were hurt this year that we're hoping will come back and help us, like Shea Simmons and Brady Fiegel, but where's the offense coming from? You have a first baseman that you're committed to with a massive amount of money who really can't stay healthy. You have a right fielder who hits but really doesn't have much to contribute. A shortstop that can't hit, you know, a third baseman coming in that we have no idea about, a catcher that's old and a guy that's coming up that can't hit. So I'm just curious, a center fielder that's having a career year, a second baseman that can't hit. So I'm just kind of curious as to where they're pulling this team together. And even if you start dumping pieces to try and bring other pieces in, you have to make sure that you're hitting on the right moves once again. And I know it's all a crapshoot, but this week really took a big shot to my confidence in this whole rebuild operation and what we have to look forward to coming forward.
Yeah, I think, Kurt, that to place so much meaning on this week is sort of fool's gold on the other side of it.
It
really is. I mean, and to use your words, we really have no idea. Right? We don't know. I mean, next year could be so much better. Let's just talk about the starting pitching. And we're going to get to the starting pitching in a second. The starting pitching could be so much better next year because guys like Folty and Whistler figure things out and we start seeing some of the other guys. You know, Jace Peterson's probably real tired. Hector Olivera, we have no idea. I don't believe left field's going to be someone that's on the team this year. Mark Hakis, you know, in theory is going to hit 12, 15 home runs next year because he's going to have an off season to get healthy. It could all be terrible, Kurt. I'm not saying it. I mean, you know, that is the dark side of the rebuild. But to me, we just have no idea. We just have no idea.
And I'm not saying it's all going to be terrible. That's not what I'm trying to say at all, and I'm not suggesting that that's what you just said. I said, I'm just saying this week was very, very grim, and so it put a lot of frowny faces on my face as to what we have and what we can put some confidence in. I know that this young starting pitching, we're all excited about these young starting pitchers, but I wanted one of these guys to break out. I mean, there was a lot of going back and forth. DOB was talking about this week, posted stuff about this is how Glavin started, and this is how Smoltz started, and this is how Maddox started. So don't get too excited that these guys are not pitching well to start their careers. Well, there are guys that started their careers who started really, really great. Jose Fernandez started 12-6 with a 2.19 ERA, and he was only 20 years old. So it's not that because you're young and you're playing on a bad team that you can't be successful. And these are breakout pitchers, you know, and I guess I just wanted one of those guys to emerge from this. And especially when we've seen some brilliance out of some of these guys with their starts, that you hope that, oh, well, this is what we're going to really be an anchor. So I'm talking too much because I don't want to say that I'm expecting the worst out of all this. I'm hoping for the best and we'll leave it at that. But it was a confidence shaking week. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, nothing went right this week aside basically from Nick Swisher.
Sweet.
You know, I mean, it was really Swisher sweet. It was really a disastrous week. But again, this, you know, I get back to this isn't really the team we have. It's going to be more mature and have a few different guys next year. So
Of course.
Let's talk about the three rookies that went this week that had a terrible, terrible time of it in Folty, in Williams-Perez, and in Whistler. you know, what is your confidence level about those guys? Are you more confident in some, less in the other for the long term? What did you come away with this week?
I will start with the positive. I still have confidence in Whistler. I obviously today was a terrible start. And he has struggled a little recently. Maybe that's an understatement, but for whatever reason, I feel like his demeanor is great. His approach is great. And I just feel like if there's a guy out of the three that has the best capacity to figure it all out and be a productive contributor to the starting rotation, it's going to be Whistler at the start of that, at the top of that list. Williams Perez, it's almost like we saw a window and we got really excited, but maybe it was an anomaly and maybe we shouldn't have gotten so excited about it.
His ERA is almost 8 since he returned from the DL.
And I mean, Whistler's ERA in August is 9.13, so it's not like he's been great. At the bottom is Folty, who I really have very, very little faith in at all, and honestly don't see that he is going to be part of our starting rotation. I think that they need to start grooming him to be in the bullpen, and I guess I probably said this before, but the thing that's troubling really with that prospect is that his first 25 pitches, the batting average against him is .358. So it's not even like he's a guy that you would, and maybe you got to obviously change your approach if you're going to be in the bullpen as opposed to if you're a starter, but that does not bode well for a closer if you're in there to throw no more than 25 pitches and they're hitting against you at a clip of .358. So
to me, Folty, I actually have the most confidence in because
you love Folty.
I do love Folty. Because of the three, I think he has the best killer pitch. You know, his 98 mile an hour fastball that paints the black is an amazing pitch. Neither Whistler nor Perez have as good a pitch. Now, Whistler and Perez, I think, have been much more consistent, especially the first half of the season, the two of them. I just don't know if you know, the adjustments that it seems like have been made by the league against them, if they can get past that. Whereas Folty, if he can really develop a good slider that goes along with his fastball, and, you know, to me, he has the highest ceiling. I guess maybe is really what I would say. Folty has the highest ceiling. I think the Braves are going to give him all of next year even to see if he can be a starter. They want the... You know, they want 200 innings out of a guy as opposed to 50 or 60. And and they think Folty can give them that. So to me, Folty, I'm less worried about Folty. Perez, given the fact that he came out of nowhere, right, was not in the top 20 prospects, all of that stuff, it feels like the first half of the season was a bit of a mirage. I'm sure that he will pitch the rest of the season and he'll have a chance to make the starting rotation out of spring next year. I have less faith in Perez. And Whistler, like you said, I think he has good stuff and a great mound presence and maturity. And I think that that could translate into making him a good 3 or 4. So, again, ugly, ugly week. But I don't feel that much different this week than I did last week.
Well, and we've talked about it a lot. I mean, there are so many other pitching prospects that we have lined up. Should some of these guys falter, that we haven't even seen some of them, and some of them obviously are pitching in the minor leagues for us right now. So who knows how productive they can be on a major league level? Yeah, I mean, I would love Folty to be John Smoltz. Because we need a power pitcher. I mean, Shelby's great, but the rest of these guys are really, that's not their forte. And so I've always felt that, especially when you get to the postseason, you need power pitching, and to be able to have a starting pitcher that goes out there and can touch 98, that would really be something.
Yeah, I just know that at some point next season he's going to put together like three great starts, and we're going to be like, oh my God, he's figured it out. I just feel it coming.
Yeah, and all this might be his confidence. And, you know, we've talked about his demeanor and walking off the field and all that kind of stuff. And maybe that's what he needs. Maybe he just needs a nice little streak to start pitching well, and it'll kind of convert that energy in a positive way.
Yep. All right, Kurt, let's move on to fair or foul, where I throw something out there and you agree with it fair or disagree with it foul. So at the All-Star break, Jace Peterson had a slash line of .252, .328, .348. Since the All-Star break, he's slashing .213, .281, .323.
Ouch.
Yeah. So with the trade of Peraza, you'd think that Peterson will be the starting second baseman next year. Fair or foul, you are worried about that.
Well, I guess I'm worried that... I'm worried about those numbers. Those numbers are bad. But I'm worried also about where the other option is. I guess Olivera can play second.
Yep.
Adonis Garcia is not some sort of long-term answer anywhere. I guess Rio Ruiz could come up and play third.
If you move Olivera over.
Right. Yeah, I haven't checked on his stats in a while, but I think that, like you said about Folty, I think that Jace Peterson is going to be given every chance to keep and retain that job through 2016. I think that maybe he could stand a couple of days off. If your supposition that he's tired is true, then maybe, you know, when Olivera comes up, you can play Garcia at second, and see if you can get Jace Peterson a couple of days off here and there. So I am worried about it, but I think that he has that job.
Yeah, I mean, he has shown stretches of brilliance at the plate and in the field. And then sometimes, well, we obviously know he's been a little ugly at the plate recently, and he can look ugly in the field as well. But there were times earlier this year, Kurt, that he was like the engine of the offense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and we loved him. You could go back and listen to old shows, and we danced on our desks talking about him.
Absolutely. So I can't say I'm 100% worry-free, but I think that it's his first year, and he's worn down. So I'm going to go foul. I think that next year, after a year under his belt, he's fine. All right, Kurt, so... Dave O'Brien tweeted earlier this week that the Braves are considering bringing Mike Minor back if he'd accept something less than $5 million for next year. So fair or foul, you would make this move for, let's call it, $4.5 million.
I would, just because I think that, as we've talked about all these young pitchers, to rely on three of them potentially in your starting five rotation, I think it would be better to have another veteran pitcher there. I know Minor has not looked great last year, and so there's a lot of doubt surrounding him. But you hope that he comes back if he gets a one-year deal, that he can kind of gain some form back and really provide. And he wouldn't have to be a top-of-the-rotation guy, really, as he was the year he struggled so badly. He would probably be a three or a four,
right,
and maybe that would help him out.
Yeah.
So, sure. I would absolutely take that shot.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many unknowns in the starting rotation outside of Julio and Shelby that, you know, you get the benefit of he's on the team. You're going, you know, I think I saw a tweet this week that in 2 weeks he's going to start throwing again. And I'm sure, surely it's light throwing to start. But you get the benefit as the Braves organization to watch his progress this last month and then in the offseason. So if they think it's a wise move just from what they can tell from, you know, his comfort level and his health, then absolutely go ahead and do it. Go ahead and, you know, give the kids a little bit more time by having a veteran, like you said, in the starting rotation. All right, Kurt, so all indications are that Hector Olivera will join the team soon, probably sometime this coming week on this homestand. So fair or foul, this will make you watch more or go to a game in person the remainder of the season?
I think I will definitely tune in to see what all the hype is about, because obviously this is a big piece of what we have going forward, and they're really relying on this guy to anchor this offense and stabilize this offense. And I'm, as a fan, I'm hoping that all those things come to fruition. I don't know that I'm going to any more games this season. And that really wouldn't have much to do with him playing or not. I just, I don't, this team, it's more of a TV watching team than it is an in-person watching team. So I am fair on watching more, foul on going to a game.
Yeah, to me, like, Oliveira doesn't get the benefit of the doubt that we're giving to the rookies in the starting rotation. He's supposed to be major league ready now. And John Hart was so, you know, persistent in trying to get this guy that it's, you know, he's such a big piece of the offensive rebuilding. We gave up so much for him. To me, his at-bats will be must-see TV the rest of the season. So, you know, fair for me as well for watching more. So
Phase two, piece one.
So sort of on that same track, Bethancourt is supposed to come back sometime this week as well. So you watching more to see Bethancourt and his, you know, maybe final audition?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on how much he actually is going to play. Are you under the belief that when he comes up that they're going to bench Pierzynski, who's their offensive MVP for the season?
I do. I think it's silly to bring him up if you're not going to start him 4 out of 6 games.
Yeah. I think he hit over 320 since he's been back down in Gwinnett. So, and I know that he's made some overtures about his behavior and that he's apologized for that. And he's taking this much more seriously now. So those are all good things to hear and good numbers to see. So, I'm excited for him to get another shot. This is another piece that we have relied on heavily and really, honestly, going forward, really important piece as a foundation if this can actually come to pass. So, I'll certainly check and see what's going on with Bethancourt and hopefully that he can contribute in the ways that we hope he can.
Yeah, I think it's such a huge 6 weeks or 5 weeks for him and for the front office because they have to make some determinations. I mean, they have to figure out if they're going to go after a catcher. If Bethancourt is not the future, and I don't think, if he looks bad, if the passed balls and the mental lapses, if all that stuff comes back again, if they don't see the preparation that they want from him, they've got to look for a solution, a catcher this offseason. They can't go into next season. AJ could fall off a cliff next year. And it would just be silly to think that AJ is going to be your everyday catcher next year at 39. You know, so if Bethancourt's not the answer, I think that this is a huge 5 week period for Bethancourt, and I would be very interested to see what goes on with that.
So what's your, and I know you don't have a crystal ball or anything, but if you had to project, do you think that, like, going into next season that the Braves bring in any offensive pieces, or do we, the offensive pieces being that Oliveira's here for a full season, that Bourne, Swisher are here for a full season, Cameron Maven returns, Markakis, you hope Freddie Freeman stays healthy. Is that kind of what you're thinking that offensively they're going to do, and maybe just get a bench piece here or there, something like that? Maybe bring Kelly Johnson back again?
I think they're going to use some of the farm system to trade for a left fielder. I think there's going to be a big bat in left field come opening day next year. And I don't know what center field holds. But I think there's a bat in left field coming. I really do. And so I think that you then look at it as, okay, we got this new bat in left. Oliveira is going to be great. Protection for Freddie. Markakis is going to have more power. Jace will be better. We've seen improvement from Simmons this year. We keep Maben, which I don't really believe. And Maben has another good year. So, but I do think there's a new bat coming in the offseason.
We should get Cespedes. We can just have the whole Cuban national team playing here.
That would be awesome. All right. So speaking of left field, new segment, Kurt, the Bourne Barometer.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's not just one of the rejected titles for a Jason Bourne movie.
It was the one starring the other guy.
Yeah, exactly. So it's our segment checking in on how Michael Bourne is doing since his acquisition. So since coming to the Braves, he is slashing 103, 167, 128. But this week was an improvement, Kirk, as he batted 111, was on base at a 200 clip, and actually his slugging was down to 111. So his batting average has fallen 17 points in the 15 days since he's come to the Braves, which I don't think is good.
I don't think those are good. All of a sudden, it's like, wow, Melvin is having a nice season.
God. So let's assume this continues. It's the end of September, and his batting average is 172. Do you think it changes the plans? And we just talked about a little bit for left field or for Maben. I mean, all the talk when Bourne arrived was, this is great. We've got our leadoff hitter. We've got our left fielder and our mentor for Malik Smith. I mean, I'll answer first. There is no way that they can go into the offseason thinking that they're going to use Maben next year if he continues to look like he just has nothing left.
You mean Bourne?
Sorry, Bourne.
I don't see how other... I mean, we didn't even talk about Malik Smith. I don't know what the potential of him playing in the outfield for this team next year is, but... you cannot have a player that you have any expectation that is a starting contributor to a team that is that bad.
It just can't be this rebuildy next year. You know, it just can't. It just can't. The final year in Turner and heading into SunTrust, it can't be so patchwork next year.
Well, and they have to start to see that. I mean, the Braves have lost the second most money of any team in Major League Baseball this year. They have the second largest decline in TV viewership in baseball this year.
Wow.
And those are obviously go hand in hand with the record of the team and maybe the lame duck status of the team being in Atlanta. But I think it also has to do with that. I don't know that everybody's really satisfied with Hart selling this as that they were going to go out and then this team being as bad as they are. And I that's my big thing with the team this year. And I'm sorry, I'm not talking about Michael Bourne, but that I don't think they should be this bad. I know that they have a lot of young pitchers, but I don't think their offense should be this bad. I know that Freddie's been out and that's really hurt them. And I know that obviously at the trade deadline, they moved all those pieces, which I have no problem with whatsoever because this team was going nowhere. But I just really don't think this team should have been as bad as they are this year.
Yeah, but this team hasn't been really, really bad until...
the All-Star break?
Yeah, until right. But you know, for a team that no one had any expectations for, it wasn't until that four-game sweep in Colorado where it all fell apart.
Yeah, I mean,
up to then, it was pretty competitive.
You've lost 22 of 24 games on the road.
Yeah, it's not good.
That's terrible.
All right, Kurt, next up, shot in the dark, our prediction for the coming week. And let's start with our listener pick for Shot in the Dark. It was from Twitter follower Scott Schuster. And Scott predicted that Jace Peterson would hit for a higher average than Justin Upton would during the San Diego series. Jace, unfortunately, batted 167 compared to Justin's 333. And the really sad thing in this, Kurt, is that Melvin beat both of them with his 444 batting average during the San Diego series.
Yeah, it's amazing. Between he and Ugla, what they've done against the Braves versus what they've done against the rest of the league, it's really quite astounding.
Yeah, it really is. So thanks to Scott. And folks, get your shot in the dark in. Submit it on Twitter or Facebook before the first pitch on Monday. We'll pick one, we'll track it, and we'll discuss it on next week's show. All right, so Kurt, before we get to our predictions for this coming week, let's check in on how we did last week. So Kurt, you predicted that Maben would bat 350 with three doubles, two stolen bases. He batted 259, zero doubles, and three stolen bases.
He did hit a homer.
He did hit a homer. Ham is not here. He predicted that the Cubs...
He's just been silent the whole time.
Exactly.
Go to him.
He predicted the Cubs would hit nine homers against the Braves in this four-game series. They had 12. And I predicted that Williams Perez would throw a complete game shutout in San Diego. He went 6 1/3 and gave up 4.
Yeah, that was over like two batters into the game.
I know. So the win goes to Hammy, who's on fire this month, is 3-0 for August. Kurt, we have to, one of us needs to win next week to just keep it respectable.
No kidding. That's, by the way, the Braves gave up 18 homers on this road trip.
Yeah, it was ugly. All right, Kurt, what do you got for this coming week? What's your shot in the dark?
Positive. Freddie Freeman, 375 and three homers. A good long homestand for the Braves. Hopefully they're sleeping well in their beds tonight, counting home run balls going over the fence instead of sheep. But Freddie Freeman, big rebound week. He gets comfortable back at home. 375, three homers.
I like it. All right, Ham sent his in. And get your pen and paper. It's a little confusing. So of the trio of Whistler, Perez, and Folty, two of them will have a start of six-plus innings, and they'll give up two or fewer runs in that in that start, but the Braves will lose both of those games.
Good luck filling that one out.
I know.
Next
basically,
week.
Hammy's like adding an hour of show prep to me next week when I try to figure out if he got it or not. All right, and I'm going that Folty, because all my Folty love, he's going to go 7 2/3, give up two earned runs. All right, Kurt, let's take a look at our win-loss predictions that we made last week and look ahead to this week's game. So for this 0-7 week, thankfully none of us got it right because we were crazy optimists. Hammy and I had the team at 2-5, and you, Kurt, all sunshine and rainbows, we're at 3-4 for the week.
See?
I know.
The hope still is alive.
All right. So for the week ahead, we got six games at home. Three against the Rockies, three against the Yankees. The Yankees just fell out of first place again. They're a half game back of Toronto, by the way.
Toronto. Unbelievable.
I know. Unbelievable. So let's look at the pitching matchups. Game one against the Rockies is Tehran against Jorge De La Rosa, who has a 4.5 ERA. Next up is Folty against Johan Flande in his 3.94.
That's the best dessert you'll have is a nice Flande.
And then we got Shelby Miller in the final game against the Rockies against John Gray, who's made four starts this year and has a 5.94 ERA. So on to the Yankees series. It's Williams Perez against Masahiro Tanaka. What could go wrong in that matchup? Tanaka has a 3.6 ERA. Next, Whistler takes on the Yankees' highly regarded prospect that came up a few starts ago, Luis Severino. He has a 2.74 ERA, the ERA that, Kurt, you want all of our rookies to have.
And as they should.
And then the final game against the Yankees, it's Tehran versus Eovaldi, old friend from Florida.
Ooch.
Yeah, and his ERA is 4.24. So we get two home starts for Tehran this week, which is good.
That is good.
Yeah. So Ham's predicting a 3-3 week, 2-1 against the Rockies, 1-2 against the Yankees. Curtis, how about you?
Exactly the same.
Yeah. And me too. I think, I think we'll win Tehran's start and Folty's start. And,
I think Shelby Miller is going to win this week.
You are crazy. There's no way. Even when we actually got him runs this week, he coughed it up.
Yeah, it's bad when like they do score and he's not good.
I know.
Or not good enough.
So crazy.
And we actually touched up Dan Heron, and I thought, nah, Braves killer no more, and not so much.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, we win Tehran's game against the Yankees, and that's it. I mean, I'm not looking forward to Friday night, a third of the place filled with Yankees fans, Tanaka on the mound.
You mean Braves fans, don't you?
Well, you think it'll be 2/3 Yankees?
Yes.
It'll sound like 2/3 Yankees.
Right.
All right, Curtis, that is the show. Everyone, please make sure you have us in your RSS feeds or subscriptions on iTunes or Stitcher so that you don't miss any of our weekly shows. And as always, check us out at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com for past shows, to check out our blogs and to post in our comments section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. Had to admit-